Do you get the sense that I wasn't exactly overjoyed to be preparing a sermon about the Trinity? I'm glad now that I did it. But the truth is, the church's doctrine of the Trinity has taken so many hits over the years, right? I mean, clearly the Trinity is in need of a new publicity agent. For one thing, it's not really in the Bible. The doctrine of the Trinity is nowhere to be found in the Bible. It comes about 200 years later, right, George, with Tertullian? Okay. It seems to have been enforced by church councils that had the strong backing of politicians who really were just trying to use the Trinity to strengthen the empire. Oh, that doesn't sound too good, does it? Sure, I want to get into all that empire stuff. To top it all off, the Trinity doesn't make sense. Is God one, or is God three? Or is God just really bad at math? Which would be a great comfort to all of us who just barely squeaked through high school algebra, right? Raise your hands. Amen. Even with all the bad press, though, the Trinity survives. And whatever we may personally think about the Trinity, it is really difficult to ignore almost two millennia of folks who have gone before us, who have written, and who have prayed, and who have sung that the Trinity makes sense of deep, powerful religious experiences. So, this morning, we will plunge in, head first, into the Trinity. But wait, what are we plunging into? That matters, right? I mean, we need to know what we're getting into. Is the Trinity a mystery, or is it a puzzle? That makes a difference. If it's a puzzle, then we can work at it, and maybe eventually we will figure it out. We'll figure out how three and one can coexist. But if it's a mystery, that's a whole different question. If it's truly a mystery and it has no solution to it, then our approach is going to be different. With mysteries, we embrace them. And we learn things about God and about ourselves in that embrace, but we never may quite get past that paradox of the three and the one, right? And in some ways, in embracing the paradox, that, the mathematical problem, that becomes the least important thing. Okay. The church's doctrine of the Trinity. I know you've been waiting to hear this. Where did it come from? Well, it's rooted, really, in human experience. I mean, something indescribable has happened in the church's life, and so we invoke metaphors, and we bring in images, and we stretch the meaning of ordinary words almost to the breaking point to try to make sense of what's happened. The Trinity tells the story of the ways that the church has experienced the saving grace of God. We've experienced God how? God beyond us, God with us, and also God within us. Three different experiences, one God. We experience God as completely and utterly beyond us, transcending us in every way, creating the universe and all that is and sustaining it through time. But we also experience God historically, God with us, God through Jesus of Nazareth, who is a window into the heart of God. And we also experience God in community and God in our hearts, in the Spirit's presence as we gather this morning to worship and sing and pray. Think about this for just a minute. Have you ever experienced this before? Have you ever prayed to God at a time when really struggling maybe with trauma or deep disappointment in your life or grief, and you didn't have words to pray, and yet somehow words and images came to you from you know not where? Maybe pastors have those kind of things happen to us more, because we get in those situations where you're called and somebody is at the hospital and they're dying and they say, "Pastor, please say a prayer." And we're like, okay. And somehow words come, right? Something happens. Right there in that moment, and they don't happen very often, but in that moment, you're experiencing what? The God that you are praying to who is beyond you. The God who is with you and who is giving you comfort. But you're also experiencing the God who is working in you. You're experiencing the Trinity in that moment. The witness of the church is that you're not experiencing three different gods. It's all the same God. And so now the problem is, how do you talk about that? Well, the Jewish experience is God as one, and so one gets flexed a little bit, and one gets stretched and expanded creatively to include Jesus and the Spirit as fully God experiences. What do we call this? Well, we combine tri for the three and unity for the one God, and we make up a new word for our experience, Trinity. It makes sense out of our experience of God at the same time that it makes a complete hash of our language to speak about God. There are hints of the Trinity in the New Testament. In the portion that we read from Paul's letter to the Romans, you can see the Trinity already there in utero. Yet there is no fully fledged doctrine of the Trinity in Scripture. Actually, there's no fully fledged doctrine of anything in these writings. Paul and James can't even agree on whether we are saved by grace or works. Now, St. Augustine and the church went with Paul and grace, but we're still kind of wrestling with that, right? That's probably a whole other sermon, so just leave that one aside. Okay. Back to the Trinity. One thing that I have really grown to appreciate about the doctrine of the Trinity, it's the part that I find the most mind-boggling. The Trinity God is not one person in splendid isolation, kind of sitting on that heavenly balcony and just, you know, sipping a mint julep and casually observing what's going on down on planet Earth. We're talking about the Trinity. And so we're talking about a community, somehow a fellowship of three persons. Greg Garrett puts it like this. Imagine the Trinity as a dance with three participants who blend into one. We were thinking about doing this with the children's sermon, but we didn't want the kids to get dizzy, right? So God, this is God in action, a beautiful swirling blur, too fast or complex for our eyes to follow. Doing all the work of God, creation, redemption, sustaining life and hope and joy. The picture is God as a whirling dervish. You with me? So the doctrine of the Trinity teaches us that relationships and community are at the heart of the universe, because relationships and community are at the heart of who God is. It's not about who is number one, because we only discover who we really are in relationship with others. Tex Sample, I think, is one of our best United Methodist gadfly theologians. Have any of you ever met or heard any lectures of Tex Sample? Yeah, he is really, really great. He wrote a poignant memoir about the death of his son, Steve, a few years ago. Steve apparently was an adorable child. He won the most beautiful baby award at the Boston University School of Theology. Anybody in here a winner of the beautiful baby award? It kind of dates you, because those things were what, back in the 50s and 60s, I guess? All through childhood and adolescence, Steve exuded charm and charisma. Everybody loved him. Steve was bright, but a learning disability frustrated him. In his mid-teens, his life just turned into wholesale rebellion against everything. Parents, against school, against any authority figures. He took his parents' car out one night, and he rolled it twice, going 85 miles an hour. He survived. It was the first of 9 accidents over the remaining 15 years of his life. He was drinking, they found out, the night of the accident. They discovered that he was doing other drugs. He lived through his teens and into his early 20s, abusing drugs and alcohol. He was in and out of jail. He was in and out of awful jobs and cheap apartments. Tex and his wife had, as you can guess, many sleepless nights and many nights that were awakened with those dreaded phone calls. They visited him. They kept up with him in jails, in hospitals, in those awful apartments, in drug rehab programs. At 28, Steve met Nancy, and they were soon engaged. Nancy went into a drug rehab program, and she encouraged Steve to join her in the program, which he did. And somehow, miraculously, he dried out. The head of the rehab program told him in the exit interview that if he was going to survive, he needed a new set of playmates. And so Steve had a great love for motorcycles and wondered how he could put that together with a new group of friends. And so she hooked him up with a unique AA group called the Visions Motorcycle Club. That club became his extended family. It became his church, this motley crew of hard-living folks who played together but who also prayed together, bound by two great loves, the desire to stop drinking and also their love of bikes. Steve began to talk about a supreme being at work in his life, looking out for him, for his good. Steve and Nancy were out one afternoon riding Steve's award-winning bike when a huge truck pulled in front of them. They weren't able to stop. Steve swerved the bike so that Nancy survived, and he took the brunt of the crash. He died a few hours later in the hospital. The funeral services for Steve were at St. Paul's School of Theology, where Tex was teaching. Tex said that he and his family felt just incredible support from his own church and also from the seminary community. What he was not prepared for was the outpouring of love from the Visions Motorcycle Club. They came. They brought food. They stayed. They prayed. They shared stories of their great love for Steve and filled in many of the gaps over the years. Imagine the array of people at that service. The seminary professors and the clergy in their robes and the theologians and people from the community and a biker gang. Imagine the parking lot that day. Tex said it looked like every used car place in town had emptied out into the church parking lot. Listen to how Tex describes it. The divisions of the world were still there, but there in that place for that brief epiphany, they were down. Well, I could never be grateful for all the pain and suffering Steve went through in his addictions. I was nonetheless struck with the people he had brought into our lives. To be glad in grief is a torque of human emotion that requires devastating loss and the advent of an unexpected gift beyond our powers of anticipation. In the rupture of his death came these sinews of people bridging the torn separations of Steve's loss. So what does it mean today to believe in the Trinity? If it means anything at all, it means that God's deepest desire for us is to be in relationship. That the work of God is calling us into holy community against our will sometimes, against our desire to just go it alone. When we join this community of faith, my friends, when we're here, we're not just promising that We're going to hang around with a bunch of folks when we feel like it. We are joining ourselves to the one in three. And we're joining ourselves to each other. We're giving ourselves to the eternal dance, to the Trinitarian tango, if you will, of praying for each other and bearing one another's burdens, of rejoicing with their joys and of weeping with their sorrows and embracing all the dear ones God sends our way and inviting them too to be a part of the dance. It may be the hardest work, this community work, this dance that you and I ever do, but by the grace of God, may we never, ever stop giving ourselves to it.